That's where it is.
Welcome. This is Jeff Sachs coming to you with Masechet Kiddushin from live Saturday night, live Tuesday night live from Mishkan Sipora after our long, long, long exile. No, it wasn't a hiatus. We were learning. We even finished the whole Masechet, but we've been learning online since almost 3 years. This Pesach, this Purim, it'll be 3 years since the Corona, Yamach Shemo. Knocked us out, and we were online, and a lot of people joined us online, and some of you are with us now, so hello to you. I see David G is online. I'm not sure I know who you are, so let us know who you are. There's Ben Dansker. David, I think you've been with us before, but I'm forgetting where you're from.
That's the Shia. I'm from Colmac. I've taken your class before.
Rabbi
Broglinder, I've taken classes with him.
That's great. So we're broadcasting. We're broadcasting online. Just tell them that Marv's in the show. We're broadcasting live for those of you that, and if you're only passing through town, you want to come one time live into the shul. It's worth it because look at all this. Look at all this neshira you get, and you get you even get a l'chaim. So we're gonna drink. Look at l'chaim. You're drinking. Not tonight.
What's the whiskey?
Why is this night different from all other nights? Right? So if those of you online, you have to pour out one on your own. So l'chaim to everybody's good health. We should be zoche to learn together for a long time and in good health and sharing a lot of smachot. Baruch atah. Amen. The first perek is still there, but we're going to start from the second perek of Kiddushin. Our plan was never to make siyumim. We've done it from time to time. The plan is to learn. Usually every year we start something new. So if you don't have them, there's Xeroxes here if you don't have. Those of you online, here you are. There's a WhatsApp group. I'm going to send the chat here. Put it in the chat there. It's worth joining the WhatsApp group, even if you're joining us only by remote. Because even though those of you that are registered for the Shir online, you get notifications through Web Yeshiva, but in all cases, if there's some kind of change, we post there. And sometimes people have interesting things to add during the week, different insights to what we're learning. So it's worth being on the WhatsApp group. So I invite you to join that. Also, just technical information, because we're now back in the shul, and the Shir meets from 8:30 to 9:30. And since we're broadcasting to people, those of you that used to come late should come on time because we're going to start at 8:30 in deference to the people that join us online. But at 9:30, we have tefillah here in the shul. So we come up sometimes on a hard stop. And sometimes we're forced to kind of break even mid-thought because 9:30, vohurachum, we're going to daven ma'ariv. So that's just the nature of the ongoing learning. We'll pick up next week wherever we left off. Masechet Kiddushin. We're going to start from the second parak, the second chapter of Kiddushin, on Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph 41a. But just a word of introduction to Kiddushin. Those of you that learned the Daf Yomi a long time, so the Daf Yomi will be the Kiddushin while we're past the Daf Yomi in, you know, like 6.5 years. Since you last were holding in Kiddushin. So it could be that somebody's memory has softened. So we'll just review. It's interesting that the way that our Gemaras are ordered, the Seder Hashas, Kiddushin comes at the very end of Seder Nashim, which is kind of curious. Of course, there are many very famous Vortlach and jokes. Not necessarily good jokes, but why Gittin, divorce, comes before Kiddushin, why Ketubot comes before Kiddushin. It doesn't follow the chronology. The real reason that the Masechtot are ordered the way that they are is, of course, size. Yeah, generally speaking, because of size. There's some exceptions. And not all organizations of Shas were always identical. As the organization, the classification of the Masechtot within Shas, it doesn't have to be in that order necessarily. But according to our universal custom, Kiddushin comes at the at the end. And it basically discusses the question which really should open up Seder Nashim. What turns this boy and this girl into man and wife? What creates the essence of a married couple, this magnificent merger? Now, you know that a couple of weeks ago, we made our first wedding. I've been involved in weddings before, including my own. But until you marry off a kid, which I'm presuming some of you have, you see it quite differently, don't you? In other words, I remember my own wedding quite clearly, but I don't remember being present in the same way that I was able to experience it and simultaneously think about it, because it was happening to me. But as a father standing under the chuppah at my son's wedding, I was able to think about it in a different way. Maybe you've had experiences that are similar or different, and I'd be happy to hear that. But to think that at this very moment, these two people, these two kids, right, they go from being two independent to one. And I'm speaking romantically, I'm speaking metaphysically, but I'm also speaking halachically, right? With that act of kiddushin, areyat mikudeshet libatabatzu, and giving over the ring in front of Adam, a metaphysical halachality is formed. It, of course, reminds us of Rabbi Soloveitchik's comments about looking at other things in nature, right? The sun sets in the west on Friday afternoon or on Yom Kippur afternoon. And it's not just an aesthetic phenomena of the beautiful setting sun, but reality is changed. It affects a change in the fabric of the cosmos, right? A minute earlier, it was whole. You were allowed to perform all of the melachot. A slip second later, It's Shabbat. A minute earlier, you were mired in the sins that you carried with you since the last Yom Kippur. With the setting of the sun, you achieve b'chilu slicha v'kapara, atonement and forgiveness. So here there's this one act which changes them, and now they are bound together, and it creates all types of other ripples of, it creates all the other types of ripples of relationships the moment that the boy marries the girl. She suddenly becomes your daughter-in-law. What? Those people that you've been planning this event, these until now they've just been part co-party planners. Now they are mukhtani.
Wife becomes mother.
Your wife becomes a mother-in-law. With all the appropriate jokes. And the truth is that that this is actually, it's not so romantic. And if you think about it too much, you know, sometimes if you scratch a little at the surface, the romance withers when you think about it in hyper halachized texts. But if I were to task you with formulating the bracha that we recite, the Masadir Kiddushin recites this Brei Pri Hagafen, and then there's this lengthy bracha, right? So you might have waxed poetic. Now, whoever composed the Sheva Brachot later, which are blessings of praise about Reim Ahuvim, beloved friends, and Kisamechacha Yitzircha Began Eden Mikedem, rejoicing as Adam and Eve did of old in the Garden of Eden at the first marriage, those are poetic. But the Birkat HaMitzvah, right, the bracha which is recited, ho ho ho, v'shavu v'anim, v'shavu v'anim. Mazel tov. You became a great uncle.
Thank you. Yes,
we became great uncles today. Our nephew had a baby. I was a great uncle before, but now I'm a great uncle. Yes. Oh, I was already a great uncle. But you weren't. I got there first. So the bracha under the chuppah, right, talks about the forbidden the forbidden sexual relations. What a bizarre thing to talk about after the chuppah, right? But what happens is that as soon as Reuven marries Sarah, so there's a whole type of trickle-down relationships, forbidden relationships that get simultaneously created. A minute before they're married, Reuven could have married Sarah, or he could have married her sister Rivka. The moment he marries Sarah, suddenly there's a relationship between him and Rivka. And Sarah now has a relationship with Reuven's brothers that transform merely what we call brothers-in-law. There's a different Masechta called Yevamot, right? Shalone, that we should know about it, right? But there's all types of complicated relationships that are formed, you know, that grow out of this particular act. So the Maaseh Kiddushin is the central topic of Masechet Kiddushin in Lashon Mikra, in Tanakh. This act is called Erusin. Right. In other words, in Mikra, it's with a sin, and in Lashon, the way it's spelled by Chachamim, it's with a samech, but it's the same word. What's the pasuk? Right. So, what? Ve'arastech li'olam, that's in Nevi'im, but in Chumash, but it's the same. But it's the same word. Ve'arastech li'olam, I will betroth you in eternity. We say as we put on the tefillin in the morning. And na'ara hamiurasa, right? A betrothed maiden, right? Is the term, right? And this is not to be confused with our colloquial term engagement. Right, and it's engagement. You know, when the boy says to the girl, "Do you want to marry me?" and he gives her sometimes a diamond ring, right? And the parents have to start worrying how they're going to pay for this thing. That has no real halachic significance beyond minhag.
It's parallel. It wasn't that.
Perhaps.
You know, secular engagement to have a marriage, but the engagement had some sense of force. The ring, you know, it meant something. So it was seen, or the Kippurim came a year before the Nisuin. It also had a sense. The problem was because of the halachic complications, they moved it all the way up.
Yeah, so you're correct that there's a certain kind of intentional similarity between Kiddushin or Erusin and what we call engagement, but halachically they're in no way related.
It would be more obvious to us if there was the original minhag waiting a year between Erusin and the Nisuin.
Correct, except even then, according to the original custom, where the Kiddushin took place long before they lived together as man and wife. We do it all together under the chuppah, simultaneously, for a very long time. That's the almost universal minhagim. But originally they would do Kiddushin, which is kind of betrothment, but it's not, it's engagement much more. A real relationship is formed. And they would do the Nisuin afterwards, a year later, and only then would they begin to live together as man and wife. But in Lashon Mikra, this is called Erusin. Nara
hamurasa. Only then they would begin to live. You say that only then.
Sorry, Ben, speak up.
You say that only then they would begin to live together as man and wife, but after one of the ways that you establish the
that's correct, but you're jumping the gun. You're jumping the gun, right? Ben points out that one of the manners, according to the first Mishnah, which we're skipping, one of the manners of affecting Kiddushin is through sexual relations. So how does that work? That's an excellent question, but that's not for tonight's topic. I see that we have a few of our old friends and some new people online. So welcome to you all. I see my old friend Mayor Crandall. How nice to see you, Mayor. They used to say we looked alike. And in order that we should look alike, we kept our hairlines the same. But again, for those of you that are online, I put a link to the WhatsApp group. I'll put it again that we encourage you to sign up for to keep on track with the sheet work. In Lashon Chachamim, in Lashon Chazal, what the Torah calls Erusin is called Kiddushin, right? Kiddushin in the sense of what?
Exclusivity.
No, what is the word? Kuvda, sanctification. You know, like we say, we say kiddush on Friday night, but maybe even more specifically from the language of hekdesh, right? In other words, if I own an object, I can be makadesh it. I can dedicate it. I can sanctify it and give it over as donation to Beit HaMikdash. I elevate it from being a mere Siri's having trouble keeping up with the shir.
It's a volunteer.
And it's important that both are voluntary acts. They're forms of elevating something from one level to another.
After which that item or person is forbidden.
Correct. Excellent point. Right? Your Makadeshin Isha, she now lives in a different kind of reality where she has an exclusive connection to her husband. And I'm Makadesh property, and now it has exclusive use only for sacred purposes in Beit HaMikdash. Excellent point.
When somebody asks a question, those of us in Zoom, hear the question.
Okay, I will try to be careful to repeat that. I will careful to repeat the questions. I mentioned this idea that it's a two-step process. The main topics of our Masechta are, let's say, four aspects of how this kiddushin works. One is the maaseh kiddushin, the act through which kiddushin is affected. The first Mishnah, which Ben already alluded to, kesef, shtar, and bi'ah, through monetary exchange, through a document. This document is not the ketubah. Do not be confused. People often make this mistake. They think the ketubah is the document with which you affect kiddushin. No, the ketubah has nothing to do with the kiddushin. Right? The ketubah is a separate, but it's not the thing which affects the kiddushin. The ketubah is a separate rabbinic obligation to stipulate the obligations of husband towards wife. Right? When the ketubah is given, and according to this custom, which kind of came about at our weddings, this wasn't done. Did any of you at your wedding have the ketubah signed under the chuppah? Now you go to, they did it. And now this is a common thing where under the chuppah, the eidim themselves sign the ketubah right then and there. When we got married way back when, it was done at the chassan's tish. There was sponge cake and a bottle of shivis, and you signed the tanoim if you had tanoim, and you signed the ketubah. But suddenly these minhagim, they change around for various reasons. But the ketubah is given and maybe even signed after the kiddushin is already completed, right? As a matter of fact, the minhag of reading the ketubah at that point in the wedding is to create a hesech hadas, to create a hefsek, a break between part A, the kiddushin, and then part B, the nisuin, which is celebrated through the reciting of the Sheva Brachot, perhaps other things, we'll get to that. The second topic is the Kavanah, the intention that the Makadesh and the Mikudeshet have to have, right? This is not something that can be done by accident. We've spoken many times over the years. For those of you that are new, welcome aboard. This is a sheet word that's been going on for 20 years, 21st year? We're starting our 21st year, so we'll have to go back and count. But we've been learning together, some of us now, for many, many years. And there's certain topics that come up again and again and again. One of them is the topic of mitzvot srichot kavana. Do you need intention to do a mitzvah? Do you need intention to do an avera? Right? What happens if maybe it's happened, you do an avera by accident. You didn't intend to do an avera. You picked up a piece of kosher meat, and unintentionally it was a piece of chazer trif. Right? You weren't thinking that you were eating a matzah. You thought you were eating a rat. Because you're Sephardi, so you can eat kidney oats. Good for you. But it turned out it's a matzah, and it's Leila Seder. Right? So by accident, you did a mitzvah. Does that count if you didn't have kavana? How much kavana do you have? So when it comes to kiddushin, kavana is essential. You can't be makadesh without kavana, and a woman cannot accept kiddushin. Neither side can enter without intent. Edim. The whole thing is meaningless unless there is a pair of kosher edim. Now, the edim are not there like other. There's all different types of edim. And one of the topics in the Masechta is this topic of how the testimony, how the witnesses function to create kiddushin. If I lend you money, the halacha is we're supposed to have a shtar, a document saying that I've lent you money. The Gemara says we learned this in Masechet Sanhedrin a couple years back. The Gemara says that even if I lend you the smallest amount of money, we're in the makolet, and I forgot my wallet, and I say, can I borrow 5 shekels? So you hand me 5 shekels. Now, we see each other every day. We're good friends. You're not worried I'm not going to pay. The halacha is that you're not supposed to lend any money at all without signing a shtar, without signing a document. La ma'aseh, we don't practice that halacha because it's not functionable for everyday small amounts. You know, here's a shekel, there's a shekel. Although, I had a friend in college, you know, before we all had, you know, Apple Pay on our phone, right, where you had to pay for things with money. He was always the guy in the cafeteria who was always going like this. He was always saying, "You got a dollar, right? I gotta get a cup of soup. You got a dollar?" This fellow must have borrowed $2,000 from me over 4 years of college, $1 at a time. So for that case, I probably should have made a shtar on each one. But normally we don't do that because the halacha says it's not. But ikar hadin, that's what you're supposed to do. So if you lend me money, whether it's a dollar or it's $1,000, and we don't have a shtar, we don't have a document, do I owe you that money back? Am I obligated to pay back the money if we didn't sign a document? Absolutely. Right? The obligation to have a document testifying to the loan is just good common sense. And since Chazal wanted to spare the Jewish people from having machlokes and having to go to Beis Din and all types of other things, they said always there's an obligation. When you lend money, always have a shtar. But if you don't do the shtar, if you don't do the document, there's certainly an obligation to pay back the loan.
The obligation is on the lender to have a shtar and on the borrower to sign it.
So Vladimir asks if the obligation is on the borrower or on the lender. It's on both, right? There's an order to have a – it takes two to tango. To have a loan, you need to have a borrower and a lender B, right? Do not forget, stay out of debt, right? But they have – no, the shtar is signed by witnesses. The shtar is signed by witnesses. If you do a maaseh kiddushin, however, if you do a maaseh kiddushin and you don't have witnesses, are you still married? No safek. There's no maaseh kiddushin without edut. Right? Unlike the loan, where you need witnesses on the loan, kiddushin by definition requires, it's not some kind of external or adjacent obligation. It's intrinsic to the maaseh kiddushin. It creates the kiddushin, right? It's a different form of edut altogether. And we'll talk about that when we get there. And finally, the Gemara discusses different types of conditions that have to be present or cannot be present in the forming of kiddushin, and what happens if those conditions are not present, bidyeved, right? Does the kiddushin count anyway, ex post facto, or not? In our perek, the second perek, the main topics, it's getting late, are shlichut, this idea of affecting kiddushin not in the normal way that we've always seen, but through an agent. Through a shaliach that you appoint to do this for you, who can make an agent, who can become an agent, different types of the mechanisms through which the kiddushin functions. We universally have only ever seen, I dare any of you to tell me they've ever seen kiddushin done with anything other than kesef or shove kesef, with a monetary exchange. And I dare any of you to say that you've ever seen kiddushin with anything other than a ring. Right? Anybody ever see kiddushin or heard of a kiddushin that was done with anything other than a ring? What? But I've heard of a shliach doing kiddushin. There was a famous case in our lifetime of a shliach doing kiddushin. Can anyone think of that? No, I think Pollard, I think she was allowed into the... Yigal Amir. Yigal Amir did kiddushin ayidei shliach. He's still rotting in prison. He did other things by shliach also, bigger things. But they had a child. So halachically it still exists, but it's exceedingly rare. So lema'aseh, we only do kiddushin with rings. But plain, usually plain gold rings. Here you can find some exceptions. Usually plain gold rings as the emtsa'i, as the vehicle to do the kiddushin. We'll get to that. Shalom asks about whether the Eidim need to have Kavana. Yeah, the Eidim need to have Kavana. Meaning they have to have Kavana. The people that are doing the mitzvah have to have Kavana that they're doing the mitzvah. The Eidim have to have awareness of what's happening, right, in order to, I guess we scared him away. It must have been the shivus. He was expecting something better.
And both the groom and the bride to have to
be. Yes, certainly. Yes. Everybody has to have a kavana. What about, say, if I own property, but lamaaseh, if I own this shot glass, crystal, not plastic, is worth a pruta. It has monetary value. And if my crazy bride would be willing to, maybe she really likes whiskey, right? If she'd be willing to accept it as the vehicle of Kiddushin, it would work. But it has to be mine. It has to be my property. What if I own property that's mine, but I'm not allowed to use it? What would be an example? Well, we were afraid we lost you. There's
a trust fund, but you're 20 and you don't get it till you're 21.
Okay. Oh, I don't. I'm not such an expert on how trust funds work. Whose money it is beforehand, but I don't know. But let's say I have a pound of beef. Property that has a lien on it. Ben points out that would be an excellent question, because I don't really have rights to use it. Let's say I have a pound of meat. Can I be Makadesh, a woman, with a pound of steak?
With what?
Is it worth shove it? It's worth much more than a shove it pruta. What if I've got a block of cheese? Am I allowed to be Makadesh with a block of cheese? Sure, why not? Good kosher meat, good hechsher, mahadrin cheese. But what if I cook them together? Now I've got, it's worth twice the value of the meat, the value of the cheese. Except what? By cooking them together, aside from violating the problem, pound of meat, Mr. Cheese, is that I am not, I own it. It's my property, except biblically, min ha-Torah, I am not allowed to benefit from it in any way. What if I'm a kadesh with this cheeseburger? What? Does it work? I mean, it's shove pruta in some fashion, because before I cooked them together, they each had value. They had value. So these are some of the questions.
But let's. The fact that food will lose its value because it spoils doesn't matter?
No, in other words, everything loses value. I mean, some things, I guess, appreciate in value, but all types of things lose value over time. That's why the custom is to use a gold ring, which has steady value or appreciates in value, or, you know, does it. But, you know, right now that food is worth something. But these are questions that the Gemara asks, and this is all by way of instruction. But let's look at the Gemara now. Daf Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph, at the top. Those of you that are online. Ha'ish Makadesh Bo Uveshlucho. A man can marry a woman. Makadesh, I'm going to use the term after having explained that that's not what it means. But for convenience sake, I'm going to use the word married. Right? But I'm putting an asterisk there. Go back to your notebooks. The first thing I said, it's not what it is. But a man can be Makadesh, a woman, or he could do it through a shaliach, through an agent, through a messenger. I was reading. I'm going to Portugal this spring. I'm leading a tour to Portugal. Reading about Ferdinand and Isabella, who were Spanish, of course, except their daughter. Ferdinand and Isabella had a daughter whose name was Isabella. That was the custom, right? So Isabella, the daughter, was married off to Manuel, the king of Portugal. And the condition to marry the daughter of the king, the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabella, was that Portugal also had to kick out all the Jews. And after expelling all the Jews from Spain in 1492, Portugal did the same 5 years later. And it was the wedding present that he gave to his bride, and the condition of marrying into the Spanish royal family was that they too had to become Judenrein, to borrow an anachronistic phrase. But when Ferdinand and Isabella got married, you know, he was from Aragon and she was from Castile, right? And it was a merger of two Spanish kingdoms into one unified major Spanish kingdom. It was done by Shaliach. They were kids. Their parents married them off, and the Shlichim came from Aragon to Castile, right? And what did they bring with them? They brought all types of presents. Maybe they brought a wedding ring. Priests probably came, and they brought this life-size portrait of young Ferdinand, you know, like one of these big paintings. Of course, you know, like the Kala wants to see the Chosin, right? She's not going to stand under the chuppah by herself, right? So they bring this life-size painting of young Ferdinand so she should see who she's marrying. Right, there was such a thing as kiddushin al yedei shaliach, even amongst Ferdinand and Isabella Rishaim. The idea exists, even though it's foreign to us. So the husband can do this, either himself or his shaliach. And a woman can receive kiddushin either herself or through her agent. Ve'ha'ish mekadesh et bito. A father can betroth his daughter, meaning. This is a kind of funny thing because it's a verb that works both transitively and intransitively, right? A number of years ago, I was the Masader Kiddushin at my sister's wedding. It was really one of the greatest things that I ever did, right? I love my sister, and she was getting married, and we liked the guy she was marrying, and I was asked to officiate as the family rabbi. It was like a really great, it's a really great thing. So I come to America and I see an old friend, a non-Jewish friend. And the person says to me, well, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm marrying my sister. In other words, I'm performing the marriage for my sister. So a father can marry his daughter, marry off, we would say, marry off his daughter, kishihi na'ara, when she is a na'ara. In the development of a young girl, there are three stages. There's what's called a ktana, a minor, which is up until her bat mitzvah, until she's 12 years old. There's a short stage that lasts from 12 to 12 and a half, called ne'ara. You would translate that, I guess, as a maiden, right? It's this half-year period from the time she becomes bat mitzvah, but before she becomes a full adult for these purposes, right? For these purposes. In terms of what we talk about at the bat mitzvah speech, about being obligated in all the mitzvot and all that other stuff, that's all completely true. But until she's 12 and a half, she cannot affect kiddushin on her own. At the age of 12 and a half, she becomes what's called a bogeret, or a major, an adult. So in this half-year period, a father is allowed to marry off his daughter to whomever he sees fit. He can do it, or he can appoint an agent to do it. Adkan. That's the end of the Mishnah. Yeah.
In this case, the father is acting on behalf of the daughter. Obviously, the groom has to still.
Yes. The groom has to agree. The groom has to give the kesef kiddushin, right? The kesef kiddushin in that case, becomes the property of the father, because as long as she is not yet a bogeret, her property really belongs to the father. And there are all different types of things about this Nara Murasa, about this young girl who's married off. Of course, nowadays we don't do this. No, that's the point. The daughter does not have to agree, at least in principle, but we'll see in the Gemara it gets more complicated. So the Gemara says, Hashta Bishlucho Mekadesh. The Gemara says, wait a second. Since the Mishnah says that a man can be Makadesh a woman through a shaliach, through an agent, Hashta Bishlucha Makadesh, Bo Miboye? Wait. If we could tell you that a man can be Makadesh a woman through a shaliach, What does the Mishnah need to go to the trouble? Why do we need to spill all the ink of those two extra letters to say that he can do it himself? If he can do it through a shaliach, pshita, that he can do it himself, right? And this is the Gemara's impulse to always assume that the Mishnah tries to be as terse as possible, that never state something unnecessary that we would have known on our own. And if the Mishnah does state something for which we have a hava amina, a presumption that it's unnecessary, then we can explain that by saying there must be a reason that the... Yeah, that's right. If the Mishnah hadn't said the obvious, then okay. So why do we have to state that he can do it himself? We could have learned that out intuitively from the fact that he could do it through a shaliach. Saul, what do you want to say? Okay, right. Yeah, but this format of like asking the obvious question. This is on a half of every page in Shas. So Omar Rav Yosef mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. Right. So the Mishnah states this in order to tell you that all things being equal, it's preferable for him to do it himself rather than doing it through a shaliach. In other words, it could have said you could do it through a shaliach. And from that, we would have understood, well, if you can do it through a shaliach, obviously he can do it himself. But by stating the obvious that he can do it himself, it's to tell you, really read between the lines. What's the Mishnah saying? You can do it through a shaliach, but it's better to do it yourself. And the apparent redundancy is there to telegraph this point. This idea of mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. Now, this is an idea that gets tossed around a lot. That all things being equal, it's better to do a mitzvah yourself. This is a value which is observed sometimes, and sometimes it's not observed. Sometimes it's in conflict with other things. Obviously, not everything can be done by shlichut. You can't have a shaliach put your tefillin on for you. Everybody has a bodily obligation to put on tefillin. Each person has a bodily obligation. Oh, no, but that's not a shaliach. No. I'm saying each person has an obligation to wear tefillin. If you're a little, I went to go do Bikur Cholim for somebody who fell and broke his shoulder and has been in a bad way. And I was there and he said to me, oh, would you mind helping me put on my tefillin? This was late in the afternoon. And whoever usually helps him didn't come that day. So he just wasn't able, the mechanics of actually winding the tefillin, he was a one-armed bandit. He couldn't do it. But that, I'm not a shaliach. I'm just a good deed doer. He's doing the mitzvah himself. The mitzvah is to wear the tefillin. I can't, to make an easier example, I can't make you my shaliach to hear the shofar, but I can make you my shaliach to blow the shofar, because there's no obligation that each person blow his own shofar, right? There's an obligation that each person hear the shofar. I can't appoint you to hear the shofar on my behalf. There's certain things that I have, but other things we can appoint a shaliach. You want to invite me to your house Friday night? We're glad to come. We're always. And the truth is our family is getting smaller. They're moving out. It's easier to invite us. He's looking like he's not sure if I'm really serious. Assure him that I am. We're going to come and you're going to make Kiddush. And sometimes, you know, there's this kind of dance that we do where we say to our guests, oh, would you like to make your own Kiddush? Every now and then there's one person who says yes. Right? But usually, what does the guest say? Oh, no, you do it. Like we know it's like rehearsed. I'm supposed to offer and you're supposed to refuse. Right? But everybody who has to say Kiddush, everybody has to say Kiddush. So why not have everybody say Kiddush? Well, it could be that it takes time. Although we could all say it at the same time. So it could be for a whole variety of reasons, right? Of course, you know that Kiddush wine was not, in at least where our ancestors lived, was not always so easy to come by. Kosher wine was not so easy to come by. All the discussions, the Gemara, that seems so foreign to us, that if you only have one cup of wine, for what should you prioritize it? Should you use it for Kiddush? Should you use it for Havdalah? Should you use it for Birkat HaMazon? right? This is unfamiliar to us because we have very good quality kosher wine, and it's really quite affordable. And if you have no money, you can buy bad kosher wine and still have plenty of it. But we developed this idea of Berov Am Hadrat Melech, that certain mitzvot are glorified, are beautified by having everybody do them together. One person recites Kiddush as the Shaliach, Shomea Ka'one, for everyone. Everyone listens along and answers Amen, and somehow that enhances the ma'amad, the occasion of us doing all the mitzvah together through one. But you understand that these two values are somehow in conflict, and sometimes we err on one side, and sometimes we opt for the other. And sometimes shlichut bechlal is not an option if I have a bodily mitzvah, right, where I have to do something myself. You cannot sit in the sukkah for me. Either I'll do it or I won't do it, but nobody else can do it for me. But lots of things you can do for me. Lots of things a shliach can do. So this idea of mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho is learned out here. V'chi ha derav safra machrich resha rava malach shibuta. And then it brings a case of two Amoraim, two great Amoraim, who, in honor of the Sabbath, would do all types of things in the kitchen in order to honor the Sabbath. Kavod Shabbat. So you know how it works. I mean, not today, but in the days of old. Do you know what Amoraim did around the house? Not much. Right? Great rabbis, they learned Torah, prayed, thought great thoughts. And they were, what they call them? Wives and daughters. They would do the cooking and the cleaning and the baking and the schlepping and the sponge and everything else. But in honor of Shabbat, these great Amoraim, they would cook the head of the fish, or they would whatever this was, machrich resha, he would singe the food, right? Meaning he would be involved in the cooking. And Rava would salt the shibuta. Shibuta is a kind of fish. When did we see shibuta? In Chulin, yafeh, that was a long time ago. Right? What's the shibuta fish? Tastes like pig. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in Chulin says that for every tasty treif thing that we're forbidden to eat, there's an equivalent. There's always a substitute. Today we have those, what are they called? Bakos? Right? Bakos which are made out of soy. Faken. Faken. You can go to Crave and eat the. Right. So, and it's a fish apparently that tastes like pig. So, if you have a lot of Yetzirah to eat pig, you don't have to eat pig. Eat shibuta. So it's not the same. You've had shibuta. So, the problem is we're not exactly sure. No, so that's it. So they go and find the Gemara asks, how did they know what pig tastes like? So that's what the Goyim are. The non-Jews were there. The expert, they'd go to the master chef, right? Who would say, that Taka, you fooled me. It tastes just like the real thing. You know, today there are a lot of these things. There's this restaurant, Yerushalayim, that sells fake cheeseburgers and fake bacon and all those other things. So some people, Baruch Hashem, lived their whole life, never ate a piece of chazer. Right? You think, oh, this is delicious. You don't know the difference. Others have been around the block, had a life before, have tasted some things in the world, and you're going, it's not so good. So our friend, Ari Greenspan, as part of his halachic adventures, running around the world, shechting giraffes and finding sea snails and all types of other, eating grasshoppers. So one of their things is they think they've identified this shibuta fish, which tastes like bacon. I don't know what kind of fish. I mean, it's identified. Like if you look in the Steinsaltz, what does Steinsaltz say? Steinsaltz doesn't give you the Latin name. I mean, in the books that try to identify the flora and fauna of Chazal, their opinions about the identity of this particular fish. But for our purposes, it doesn't matter that it tasted like bacon. The point is that Rava, he'd make the herring. He'd pickle the herring on Erev Shabbos and on Erev Shabbos. Why would they do it themselves? Mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. Even though they had servants, and they had wives, and they had daughters. So ikad amri baha isura nami itba. So some say that the reason for all of this, the reason that it's better to do it yourself, is because there's a potential prohibition involved in not insulting the fish or having somebody else salt the fish, but in marrying a girl through a shaliach. What's the prohibition? What could be a possible prohibition in marrying a girl? Rav Yehuda, Omarav, the Omar Rav Yehuda, Omarav, Asur la Adam, Shekadesh et Isha ad Sheyirena. It's forbidden to marry a girl unless you've seen her, right? Then it's that old kind of, that old Bava Maisa, that old stereotype of, like, you know, the Jewish wedding, the shtetl, where you didn't meet the girl until you went to the chuppah. The first time I met you was on our wedding day, said Golda to Tevya or Tevya to Golda. Right? So it could, maybe it was on the morning of the wedding, but not under the chuppah. You can't, it goes against the halacha. You can't do this. Shema yir'eh badavar miguneh. Vitit ganelav. Maybe he'll marry her, a mail order bride, right? And she'll show up, right? That's what these mail order brides were. You'd send the money to Poland and they'd send you a bride, right? But I think they only got married once she showed up in Montana or wherever it was. But if he marries her without knowing her first, so maybe he won't like her. She'll become miguna. Despised. She'll be yucky to him. Right? V'rachmana amar, and this is a problem. What's the prohibition? The Torah says, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. If you have to love your neighbor as yourself, kal v'chomer, you have to love your wife. Right? So to marry somebody without at least having, now, of course, the Chazal knew, by the time they wrote Kiddushin, they'd already written Gittin. They knew that sometimes things go wrong. Yes, things go wrong. But lechatchila, right, the way you should set it up is that everybody has to get off to a fair start. Right? So you can't marry her unless you know there's reason to think I'm going to like her. Right? Now, you could say this means, like, you know, he's going to, like, look under the veil and find out that, you know, she's ugly. Right?
I mean,
you know,
if they couldn't match, then he had to go off somewhere and we'll
right. No. So, but in other words, why all things being equal, is it better to do it yourself, right? Because of this, are you allowed to do kiddushin through shlichut? Yes. But why is it better to do it yourself? Because it will minimize this. But you can't do kiddushin through shaliach if you've never met her before, right? What Ferdinand and Isabella did lehalacha was no good. Now, fortunately, they weren't so concerned about halacha. Right, but they'd never met. That's why they bring the picture. But
no, good in that
idea. It shouldn't work.
It's not possible.
It shouldn't work to marry somebody if you've never met her. If you've met her and in person, what, on Zoom?
Yeah, that's correct.
I don't know. Chazal didn't know about Zoom.
No, but theoretically, you could see from a distance.
Until you've seen her, right? Which might assume that again, you're assuming, like, you know, that's like a halachic question that, like, what is the definition of ad shirena? But let's imagine we are Chazal. It means until you've seen her, and it might not just be to see that she's pretty, whether you're attracted to her, but to, like, you should know her a little bit, right? Right? You should know something about her character. You should know something about her. Right?
Or is a blind man allowed to marry?
Is a blind man is obviously allowed to marry. But so obviously it's not
really
right. But now there it might be because he's not gonna come to think that she's not right. The blind man, she really remains as beautiful as she was on her wedding day. Yeah. Yeah, in other words, but lechatchil you have to. V'chi itmar de Rav Yosef a seifa. So Rav Yosef's halacha mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho, it's better to do it yourself than doing it through an agent, is talking about the seifa of the Mishnah. Itmar ha'isha mitkadeshet ba'o v'shlucha, the woman can get married herself or through an agent. Ashta b'shlucha mikad shabo miboye. Omer Rav Yosef mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho. It flips it on it. Wait, so if we say the woman can do it through a shaliach, what does it have to say? She can do it herself. Obviously, she can do it herself, right? To teach you mitzvah ba yoter mibishlucha. Yes, a woman can send a shaliach to receive the kiddushin, but it's preferable that she do it herself. V'chihader of safra machichresha of milcha shibuta. Just like these chachamim who on Shabbos would prepare the food themselves and not rely on the shlichim. Aval beha isura leitba. How in the case of the woman accepting it through a shaliach, there's no fear of the isur. Why? Well, if a man sends a shaliach to do the kiddushin, if a man sends a shaliach to do the kiddushin, and he's never seen her, and then she shows up in the mail, and he doesn't like her, so he's in gach tzaris, right? He's over on ve'aftal recha kamocha. He's not loving his wife the way he wants to, or the way he loves himself, right? But a woman, if a woman accepts it through a shaliach without ever having seen Ferdinand in the flesh, there's no problem. There's no potential iser. Why? Kidresh lokish, the omeresh lokish, tav lemetiv tandu, milametiv ar. A well-known but very problematic Aramaic expression. Right? A woman prefers to be married, I mean literally a woman prefers two bodies together, rather than sitting alone.
But that's also true of a man. I'd say the more obvious issue, and that is that women are not as obsessed with looks as men are.
That's not what Tav Lemetiv Tandu means. It has nothing to do with looks per se. Tav Lemetiv Tandu is a halachic category. It's what's called in halacha a chazaka, right? A chazaka, right? It's an established reality that a woman prefers to be married even though she would have liked somebody that was better looking. Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a difficult concept, but let's get our head around it first. Tav lemetiv tandu milemetiv armelu means that all things being equal, a woman would prefer to remain in a less ideal marriage than to leave it and to be alone. Now, you ask the question, is that true for men also? Bring me a proof text that it's true for men, a very biblical proof text. Lo toveo dadam levado, right? Says God to, which Adam? Adam 2, right? Chapter 2, right? It is not. No, he says it. No, 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 no. This is Adam. Adam. That's Rabbi Soloveitchik's Lonely Man of Faith points out the differences between the description of creation of Adam in chapter 1. Who was nicknamed Adam 1, Adam of chapter 1, and Adam as depicted in a parallel story of creation that's told in chapter 2. Only in chapter 2 is Adam told it's not good to be alone. Adam in chapter 1 never experiences loneliness because he's created simultaneously with Eve. Right? That's the midrash of Adam and Eve being created as like Siamese twins. He comes into the world already married.
I do not recall the passage being addressed to.
So
Adam.
In chapter two, we learn lo toveot Adam levado. Whether it's addressed to him or it's a statement of his of his psychological reality, it's not good for man to be alone. But
that's good.
He's not talking about
correct.
The man is.
This is. Yeah, Ben, speak up.
That the man is required to see the woman. The woman isn't required.
The man is, The man is required to see the woman. The woman is not required to see the man, because even if afterwards,
for a man to see a woman without her seeing him.
Okay.
He could divorce her if he didn't like her.
Because he could divorce her, right? Because she's stuck.
There's no scenario where she would like him. She would, and since the assumption is that she would probably be alone, so they're going to go home.
Okay. There are various questions. There are various questions here. We have to explain. We have to explain this kind of strange comparison to the Amoroyim, cooking on Erev Shabbos. Right? Interestingly, although I gave an example of where we do say mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho, right? Now, there's this kind of idea got passed around, but in Chazal, there are only two places where we talk about where mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho is called out. Kiddushin and Kavod Shabbos. What is the connection between doing sponja and cooking the food and doing the marketing on Friday? Well, interestingly, they both are connected to this idea of being Mekadesh, right? Of being Mekadesh. Although Kavod Shabbos, when are we Mekayim Kavod Shabbos? An Erev Shabbat. Kavod Shabbat, there are two dinim related to Shabbat. Kavod and Oneg. How are you Mekayim Oneg Shabbos? To enjoy Shabbat? On Shabbat. That's eating the good food. That's drinking the scotch. Right? That's taking a shluf. Right? That's singing Zmirot. There's also Oneg Shabbat for the Neshama. Right? That's lighting Shabbat candles. Right? So that you shouldn't be, it's not pleasant to eat in the dark. Right? What happened last week? Oh, really? We were away for Shabbat. There was a blackout here last week, we were told. But Kavod Shabbat are all the things that you do in preparation for Shabbat, right? Mopping the floor, making the beds, setting the table. We're not always so careful about this because we're always so rushed. The halacha is that the table, the Friday night table, is supposed to be set before you go to shul. So when you come home from shul, it's ready. It's not, you're not like still putting away all the dishes and all the other things. It doesn't always work. People aren't always organized, particularly in the winter, on a short Shabbat. But that's Kavod Shabbat, that the table should be set before Shabbat, that the nice fancy dishes, right? The challahs should be ready. Everything should be set ready. That's Kavod Shabbat. So what does Kavod Shabbat and Kiddushin have to do with each other? Well, Kiddushin is also a type of preparatory step. So there's something to be said there. Anyway, we're going to have to cut it here. Like I said, sometimes we run up on a hard deadline. We will continue from here. Hopefully we'll move at a faster pace next week, but we did have a lot of introduction. And again, join us on the WhatsApp group to keep updated on what's going on, and you guys can
Rosen. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.